So talk to me about Castle Doctrine.
Okay, so the Castle Doctrine was this game made, I think it was like maybe, let me look this up. I think it was like 5 or 6 years ago at this point. By this guy, Jason Rohrer, who's a pretty quote-unquote esteemed indie dev, mostly for a Flash game he made in the mid-2000s called Passage, which is a five-minute, I don't like to use the word walking simulator because I think it's an unfair term to games because I think those games are more about exploring. But this was a walking simulator because literally what you did was just you walked with the character and stumbled across landmarks that would give you points or like treasures. I can't remember what the actual thing was, but you'd stumble across that and then you'd meet your spouse and then they'd die and then you'd die. And and that was supposed to be deep because, oh, it's a game that shows death. Unlike... Right. Every other game ever fucking made. Death is the only thing games actually grasped at that, you know. That's the only thing you couldn't argue games, like, understood. It's, like, the main thing.
It's pretty
true, actually. But, yeah, so he got all this acclaim for this pixel art, you know, walk simulator. And, you know, just I'm sounding arch, but to be clear, I lapped that shit up as a high schooler. Like, I thought, oh my god, this is so deep. This is a game, you know, where it seems like you're just walking around, but it's about life and shit. And like, oh god, it's awful. But
yeah, right.
Anyway,
right.
So he parlayed that into a career of making abstract games. He made some interesting in concept ones. Like, he made this one game in the Starfield Sky where it's like a recursive shooter where like it's like, you know, you control a little ship and then you go into another thing and you go deeper and deeper and deeper in like a molecular level. Sounds cool, played like shit. But
right,
anyways, the Castle Doctrine, okay, it was vaguely an MMO game where you played as this patriarch in the early 90s that your job is to protect your family and your valuables by setting up a series of deadly traps for home invaders. But in this weird dystopian world, I guess you'd also go invade other people's homes to try to get their wealth. Or you, I guess you wouldn't. You wouldn't have to. And that's why I ended up getting the game at first. Because I'm like, okay, there's some weird shit about this. But like, that's an interesting mechanic from the sound of it. Like, the idea that you can either opt in or opt out to the system. Or maybe you can like find ways to dissuade people without killing them or anything like that. And in theory, all those things are there. And the one thing else,
right.
And this is weird because like all his other games that I mentioned before are technically quite deficient and uninteresting. And again, as I said, I loathe this game. It's a wretched game, but it mechanically was interesting because it was just, you know, sort of like, you know it's top down map making, you know almost like Dungeon Keeper style thing where you just, you know, planned out, you know, these weirdly complex traps. And at first that was vaguely satisfying.
Sure. Yeah.
And then you'd go invade other people's homes, and when you mess up, you'd die this fairly gruesome death, you know, with pixel art. But the first thing that was really shitty about it, above all else, is it's a game based on the concept of the Castle Doctrine, this really toxic, vile, evil law that has been used, you know, not just broadly for how many gun-related homicides it's been responsible for, but specifically for how frequently in the South it has been used to justify race-based homicides.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Castle Doctrine is the, I mean, it's the establishing concept. The entire the Castle Doctrine is a legal concept. Like, the name is ripped from the legal concept that a person's home or, you know, occupying place, like a vehicle, it permits a person to use force to defend themselves in that area up to lethal force. And it's a common law in the United States, but it's often been expanded, you know, into further laws such as, you know, the Stand Your Ground law that famously was cited in the defense for George Zimmerman's murder of Trayvon Martin.
Of course, yes.
So, you know, it's that kind of mentality, and it's a very common mentality in, you know, amongst, you know, very, you know, proponents of gun ownership, you know, and you know, like hardcore Second Amendment rights defenders, this idea of defending your property and defending your land. But I still like was like, okay, maybe this is going to be like a criticism of it, which, you know, I think I just played Spec Ops at the time, which, you know, you've written about, and like
I have, yeah,
that's a great example of a game using mechanics and story to make you feel very bad about everything you're doing.
Of course, yeah.
So I gave it a try. And it was first, it was, first of all, it was very broken of all, but more than anything, it was not critical at all, which makes the second wretched aspect of it all the more off-putting, in that you had to always play as this man. You always had to play as a patriarch, and you always had to defend your wife and child. And or give them a route to escape. Or you could, you know, let them be killed and to further protect your art. It was this weird dynamic that seemed like a very arbitrary choice in a very callous way. Because, yes, games right. ask you to make these arbitrary choices all the time. Of, you know, what are you going to prioritize? What are you going to save? What are you going to shoot at? And I guess we don't blanch at that normally, but the particulars of this scenario where you are protect, you know, you have a home, and the only identifiable characteristics you have in this home are your valuables in a nondescript safe, your child, and your wife. None of which have any autonomy. All placed on the same level that basically assess points and value in the game. So first of all, it's very interesting that Jason Rohrer has not one but two games in which he views your spouse's property and points accumulation, basically.
That is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. I wish there was a word that started with M and ended in misogynistic to describe that mindset.
Yeah, but there's no such word as that.
No, there's no such word.
No.
But more than that, it's just all the ingredients were there for a game that uses mechanics to be critical of the practice. You know, you see that with Spec Ops, you see that with Hot Miami. But, and it's hard to pin down exactly what made it so clearly non-critical. But I think part of it is how vocal he was in promoting the game and talking about how it was based on his own experience dealing with, you know, having been robbed before. And it's interesting. The one thing I forgot to mention is it has a permadeath mechanic where you accumulate wealth from robbing other people.
It's based on Rohrer's experience of getting robbed before.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Go ahead with permadeath. I didn't know that.
Yeah. No. It's permanent, and you can you can steal from other people or just defend your own stuff. And if people die in your place, you get their money, you know, and stuff like that. So it seems like it has an interesting push-pull mechanic. Again, design wise, it's pretty sound, even if it was like buggy and, you know, weirdly unbalanced. And very hard at points. But it also had an interesting element where the multiplayer element was very anonymous. All you had to identify people were initials for players.
Mm-hmm.
And so players would climb this very small pool of players would climb up in notoriety for with huge, complex, traps and missives and stuff like that. And as you accumulate more wealth, you can buy more traps, yada, yada, yada. You know how it goes. It's games all progress. Those kind of things all progress in the same way. But even the most interesting mechanic, again, I can't stress that it's an interesting game from a mechanical level because you have to test out every trap you make. And if you die in your own thing, you die just for realsies in the game and then you have to reset.
Right.
But again, it's all wrapped up in this awful taste of like this horrible patriarchal, libertarian power fantasy of, it takes this horrible scenario in this horrible world where everyone's robbing each other at gunpoint. And instead of feeling critical, it almost treats it so neutrally as to possibly endorse it as a fun pastime. I don't think Rohrer was trying to say, oh, you should go out and rob and shoot people, and oh, you should, that'd be as intellectually dishonest as, Jack Thompson talking about Grand Theft Auto. But I think it's careless. Right. I think it's careless to try and frame this kind of approach to life and this weird property-oriented view on people, and especially women, to gamify that. And so many other games have done this. Like, there are so many other games that have this wretched approach to women and to human life and to how we do things. But people really came down on this one, even including myself, because I think being an indie game, there's an expectation of sensitivity.
Yeah.
Which I think
absolutely
is an interesting falsehood in indie games, because there's a lot of really shitty, callous indie games out there. That awful game Hatred that was out a year or two ago. Yeah. Like, that was an indie game, you know? That's, you know...
That was, yeah.
Postal was an indie game. Yeah.
Terrible, yeah.
Yeah. But they don't... this, so people, I guess, like to tell themselves this kind of misanthropy isn't in there. Like, these kinds of, like, you know, cynical, empty games aren't there. But they're there. And it's just interesting to me that it caught someone... Because if you Google Castle Doctrine, you'll see plenty of... Probably more than any positive... You won't see any positive reviews, but you will probably see a lot of think pieces about how bad it is, and how wretched it is. And I co-sign them. I think for all its mechanical interests, it's an evil game, but it's just because of the behavior. You know, it immerses you in a behavior that, while for me it made me nauseated and created a sense of dread, I don't think it was designed to do that.
That's interesting. So it's like the worst game you've ever played, but also its flaws you think are not intentional on the part of the author.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's careless. It's intentional in the same... It's not intentional in the same way that, you know, casual liberal racism is not intentional. Both Roar's, you know, malicious, you know... POV here, and, you know, the way liberals view, you know, race or class, are all come from a place of seeming well intention. It all comes from the idea that you think you get it, and you're just trying to embody the badness to cry it. But it's just, I can't even pin it. It's unfortunately the kind of thing where you to best capture how bad it is, you have to play it. Which I would not encourage anyone to do. I wouldn't encourage anyone to give it any money to it, you know. But it's such a weird phenomenon. The idea of, first of all, in making a game about that is odd. I'll give it that. Let's put it aside. I want to make a game about being robbed, but I want to turn it into an MMO, or a multiplayer strategy game. And I'm like, okay, well, that's weirdly ambitious, but. How I think it's an important case study in how critical it is to make sure whenever you're designing a game, especially a game that's purposely provocative like this is, that you have to have a clear message and a clear purpose as to why you're doing that if you don't want it to inadvertently do harm.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that's true of a lot of things. I think that's true of much bigger games that people love. I mean, this is an article I've been trying to write for a while, but the Civilization series, one of my very favorite game series ever, has a very, you know, awful view on, you know, any movements outside of a large nation's, you know, consolidated power.
Why does Civilization hate the barbarians?
Yeah, so Civilization hates
sort of your version of it.
Yeah, no, I mean, Civilization treats everything that's not your governmental power as either a barbarian or enemy. As you settle, you're encountering all these barbarians, and they're just presented to you as enemies. They're never presented as, you know, native peoples, never presented as civilian dissidents within your own kingdom, but they fill all those roles. They never present as a oppressed populace, but they are always in that position. And I think the same thing is here with, and I don't think that people who designed Civ are here with it. At least initially, they didn't put that much thought into it. I think they thought, oh, well, we have to have bad. You have to have enemies that are not, you know, AI, you know, not player controlled or, like, you know, not country based and are just, like, sort of, like, stirring shit up. So let's put barbarians in there. But it still has that very harmful effect of just viewing everything that's an opposing power to your nation as either unjustifiably barbaric and that needs to be wiped out, or as an enemy state looking to take your territory. It's absolutely fascistic. And in the same way, you know, Rohrer's Castle Doctrine, you know, it takes, you know, four very human components. It takes your neighbors, yourself, and your two members of your family, and turns them all into these, you know, very limited, you know, limited enemies and totems. You know, all your neighbors are your enemies. They are all trying to rob you, and you're trying to rob them. Your family is nothing more than possession and point accumulation. It's a weird phenomenon. Again, we were talking earlier about simulating the effects of simulating the feelings you get from movies and television and other art and other mediums, and trying to put that in video games. But games like this, games like, you know, simulation games in general and strategy games in general, are trying to capture the feel of power and a feel of control. But in order to do that and capture that feel, it requires a reduction of the complexities of power that it's so much worse than the reduction of complexity already inherent to wielding power. Like, to be in power, you already have to minimize the livelihood of people to a certain extent in order to even conceptually grasp it. Because if you, you know, for all I will constantly criticize any president in the United States history, which I will, they're all evil. They're all fucking shitheads.
Yeah.
But right.
Yeah.
For all that, you have to understand, I mean, you have to admit, like, can a single person grasp the humanity behind not just 370 million lives, but all in being the most powerful nation, all 7 billion lives in this world? Can they actually wrap their head around that? Absolutely not. We come from, you know, people were not designed to interact with more than like 100 people in their entire lives. You know, we were, you know, cave dwellers and agrarians, you know. We didn't have this mass communication network. And now we are all participants in a global society, and people in power are thrust in positions where they are not only able to, but will to exert that influence over all these people. And in order to do that, you just inherently dehumanize people to do that. And that's the same effect you get with power in games, but it's just amplified so much because of the limits of programming, and the limits of time, and the limits of input.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. That is the most thorough answer to tell me about the Castle Doctrine that I could possibly hope for. That was fantastic.
Sorry.
No, I'm just giving you a hard time. That was fantastic. I'm not upset about that at all. The more interesting things my guests have to say, the better.
Yeah.
I think people don't probably tune in to hear my prattling.
I disagree. You have an incredibly soothing, like, you know, like, I was gonna say radio voice, but podcast voice, you know.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Which I will not make you do your Ira Glass impression as much as I want to.
I should do a podcast bonus episode where I just read stories in a soothing voice.
Oh my gosh.
People like that. People listen to podcasts to go to sleep. It blows my mind, but
it just starts doing ASMR on the side, you know?
I'll start doing ASMR. That, yeah, good idea. I'll just have to figure out how to whisper.
Yeah. Me chewing. This is me chewing on tinfoil.
You just whisper as Ira Glass. Do that a little about ASMR too.
If you donate our $100.
No, his voice is really good for ASMR. All right. My second question to you is the question I ask everyone. And in a way, you sort of have described it a little bit in how frustrated you were at, like, the ambition in Castle Doctrine and the utter, like, inability of it to deliver on that ambition, and also just, like, the problematic qualities of civilization, but then also, like, the ways in which it reflects this inability to understand that we have as a people. But I'll let you answer, just in case those aren't the games you would want to make. If you had all the resources in the world, every bit of money or talent or leeway and permission that you could possibly want, what would be the game that you would choose to make, or that you think you'd most want to see in the world?
Oh man, I knew this question. I didn't even think about it at all coming into this.
I've heard
this many times, and I still didn't think, oh, I should probably come up with an answer to this.
No one comes up with an answer. No one does.
It's, which, yeah, it's great. You get lulled into this false security. There's a lot of things. If you asked me this, like, you know, 10 years ago, my answer would have been, oh, just Roller Coaster Tycoon, but better. But no.
They made that.
Yeah, they made that. Oh, they made it. It's Planet Coaster, and it fucking rules. It's, but no. They, I guess for me, the ultimate game, and Breath of the Wild got at this for me a little bit. And to a lesser extent, No Man's Sky did too. Even though No Man's Sky is not a very good game, but I loved it. I love games where you can, you know, basically use the limits of reality and of the physics of the world to absolutely bend it and to explore new things. But I also like stealth games a lot. So what I would ideally like to do is, like, a stealth game where your character can, you know, basically I guess it's a little bit like Gunpoint, you know, how your character could just bizarrely like go or not Gunpoint, sorry, like the I'm thinking of Deadbolt, sorry, which is similar to Gunpoint.
Oh, could, like, yeah, yeah, no, yeah, I know what you're talking about, though.
Go
yeah,
through vents thinking, and stuff like that. Yeah,
it is like Gunpoint a little bit, but yes, I know Deadbolt, too.
And, but, like, so I guess it would be a stealth game, like an open-world stealth game where your only objective is to get to something, you know, and without detection. But instead of just merely hiding in shadows or hiding behind things or hiding, you know, in cardboard boxes, I think it would be interesting if you could just like a cross-dimensional stealth game would be very cool, where like you could or maybe something like, you know, like Super Time Force, which was a side-scrolling shooter where you could rewind time and fight alongside yourself, something like that. Ooh. Where you could like you know but an open world version of that where you could basically create a ripple effect that stacks upon itself to find new solutions to puzzles. I'm always like interested in that kind of way of engaging with things. I'd have to do
So you'd like to see a version of gaming that, or a game that like you talked a little bit about games that sort of play with their limits, and
yeah.
I think like this would be a game that plays with the limits of like glitches, like kind of produces like glitches.
I love that
productive
one. There's like one freeware game I really loved called it was called ROM Hack Error. It was made for like a game jam, and just takes all these sprites and maps from different games and gameplay mechanics from different 8-bit games and like randomly shuffles them, and sometimes unplayable. But it's great because it's like it's this weird confluence of elements, and you have to, and there's no set solution. You have to determine a solution with the materials there, which is again what I love with Breath of the Wild. You could solve things in so many ways. So I love with Metal Gear Solid 5 too. So I either do that, or I would make a simulator for what's the most banal. Let's just cut the middleman. I'd make a toilet simulator. You know,
toilet simulator.
There we go.
All right. Yeah. So what?
No, very banal, very realistic. You know, it's just like getting the exact physics of the flush. You know, you could choose between four different brands, and you can choose whether you want to have like, you know, a liter per flush or 0.6 liters per flush. It'd be really robust. Ooh. People are really into
nice.
People are really into truck simulators. I feel like toilet simulators are the next. Next big market there.
Yeah, like almost like a plumber simulator.
Yeah. Oh, that's not gonna catch on.
You're right.
Yeah.
It's only gonna be the next big thing.
Yeah.
I like that. That I would play that.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't shit in the toilets. The toilets are all showroom toilets. You work at a toilet store.
It's not a gross game.
No, it's a classy establishment. And you know, in this toilet simulator, you're mostly simulating the toilets to make sure they're properly maintained as you go around the showroom so people can buy their toilet of their dreams. And then after that, you go home from your long day at the toilet store to talk to your happy family, whether your partner of whatever gender they are and your children of whatever, you know, genders they are. You know, you talk to them and try to make yourself feel good about your daily life, and then go to bed and stare at the ceiling and wonder what would happen if you did something differently, and then you go back to the toilet store.
Wow, the part where you like seriously consider your life choices is like a very that's a new and bold addition to the simulation genre.
It's the unspoken part of those truck simulators, like, you know. Yes, you're driving, but what's not considered there are the Modest Mouse songs that happen in between.
Yeah, I think there's a reason for that, but I also think that there may be a reason to not do that. Like, there might be a reason to do what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean,
I like it.
Oh, thank God for the world that I don't know how to program. It's
no, it's the world's loss, my friend. All right, well, thank you, Donald, for being on. Again, if you don't follow Donald, follow him at Boringstein. It's B-O-R-I-N-G. S-T-E-I-N, and definitely it's a pinned tweet at the top. It's really good. His documentary, I'm actually laughing. That's right.
Yeah. I hope he found it as amusing as I did. I hope everyone finds it as amusing as I did.
I found it quite amusing, and I think if you like this podcast, and especially if you like Chapo, or even if you don't, it's a fun observation of where we are and how we got there. So I think definitely check it out. And thanks, man. Yeah. Come back anytime.
Dude, thank you so much. This is a blast. I'll figure my way down to Philly sometime soon.
All right. Yeah, no, definitely. I'll be up in New York at some point as well. I think I'm supposed to. Well, I'll tease that for now.
Oh, hell yes.
All right. Talk to you later.
Yeah, see
you. All right. Bye.